This is the Next Bite of Life podcast, the place to be to hear personal stories from expats, digital nomads, and everybody else taking their next bite of life. Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Next Bite of Life podcast. My name is Kem Kem, of course, and today I have Maitri Meliana, and she is a very fascinating person to talk to. And I'm so eager to ask her a few questions today. So say hello to everyone, Maitri.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you, Kem Kem.
It's nice to have you. I'm so glad you were able to join us. So tell us, where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Oakland, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Nice. So how's the weather down there? I know you're awfully eager and you're very, you're big on the morning and you've already had a run and it's only 9 o'clock in the morning that you're at your end.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. It's cool in the morning and it's a little misty. So I love this time of the morning and then it gets really warm in the day. So it's a lovely time to,
that's great,
you know, be up and have fun.
Great. So how long have you lived there?
I've lived in the Bay Area since 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where were you before that?
Before I was in the South Bay, and then I was in India for a few years. But I've gone back and forth from the U.S. My family immigrated to the U.S. when I was 16. And then somewhere in the middle of my life, I decided to live in India for about 7 years and then moved back to California.
That was, oh, wow. For me. Mind if I ask you which part of India?
Bangalore.
Ah, nice. Now that's a place I've never been to. I've been to New Delhi, but not Bangalore. Now, you mentioned that your family emigrated here from Bangalore when you were 16?
They immigrated. We immigrated from Hyderabad, which is also in the south, but it's a state to the north of the state that Bangalore is in. Yeah. And we immigrated from there to North Carolina. So it was very, very big culture shock.
Yeah, I can just imagine. At the age of 16, how did that feel? Like, what kind of experiences did you have there?
Oh, it was, I really felt probably like how somebody would feel if you went to Mars and it was populated. I mean, I had grown up reading, I think, British books, you know, storybooks, and so that was my version of the West, and Archie comics, and that was all my exposure. We didn't have TV, so there was no, you know, I had no idea. I had an aunt who lived in the US, and she just brought back lovely gifts every time, but that was it. So when I came, I first went to high school for the summer, and then I went to college right away, because in India we finish college or at that same age.
Yeah, there's no gap year like they do in no such thing.
No, so it's a very different educational system. So I was young, you know, I was 2 years younger than everybody in college, and it was very hard. It took me 2 years to acclimatize. First of all, my accent was different, and I was in a Baptist college where there weren't many people of color, and there were only two Indians, and they didn't want to know me at all.
Because they're trying to acclimatize themselves, and then it's like, no.
And, you know, the other foreign students were mostly from Europe or South America, and so I felt really lost, and I was also very shy, and I had grown up, you know, I didn't know it at the time as deeply, but I'd grown up with this whole colonial mindset that white people are superior. And I know how much that was running me. So, you know, I would go up to people, I joined a few groups, and, you know, it wasn't like I just walled myself off. I really tried as much as I could to connect with people. And I was also a day student, so I was living at home. So that complicated things, you know?
Yeah.
But it was really hard to make friends. People would say hello, and I would say my name
and just freeze.
And people would go,
like, she's special. You know?
I don't know what's special, but it's like it's too much to even get too much work to get to know this person.
That must have been so lonely.
I was very lonely. I was horribly lonely. I would cry, and, you know, I would just go to the library and find, you know, just wall myself off there, or music. And then once I decided what I wanted to major in, which was music, I had a community. I made friends in the music community, and those were my friends. And I became more and more confident and, you know, got more and more acclimatized. So, yeah, it took a while.
When you first got there, were the other kids nice to you, or did you feel that there were any sort of racism undertones, or that was just, it was just basically from your part thinking that they were superior, and so you sort of reacted based on that belief?
I think there was both. I mean, I think it was both ways. Some people were nice. People were nice and friendly, but it's really the South. Right, it's North Carolina is the Deep South. I consider the Deep South, and I think people probably just didn't want to trouble themselves. You know, like I said, it was work, and my name is very symbolic of we don't want to really sort of step across our culture to get to know somebody from a different culture, and it was very painful because, you know, women, it didn't matter. Women, I mean, men, of course, I wasn't going to approach them, but it was really painful. And, but in the music department, which was small, I think that people were friendlier there. And also, I think in India, it's so open. When there's a newcomer, we just bring them into the group.
Yes. By hook or by crook?
Yeah. You know, it's like we absorb them. We'll just go bring, like many people just, it's like, it's not, we just do it instinctively. It's not a polite thing. It's like, we cannot imagine anybody being alone. Yeah. So it's on a cultural level, I kind of expected that, but nobody did that.
Yeah.
Every man for themselves, and, you know, it was hard shifting from that group-oriented culture to a very individualistic culture. So that is a part of it as well.
Yeah. I think even till today, it's still like that. I mean, I grew up in Nigeria as well, and I came to the U.S. like at the age of 12. And the cultures between India and Nigeria are sort of similar. You know, it's like you say, everybody's family. And even till now, my husband has a problem when we go home to visit. He's like, your family just drops by anytime they want. I'm like, that's just what we do. I mean, it's like they don't even call or anything. I'm like, no. And they'll wait there for hours till you get home if you're not home, you know? So
it's so different. It's such a different mindset. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, so it's a big leap. There's a big, and I love that you've had that experience as well.
did you feel like, you know what, take me back home. I don't want to deal with this right now. Or being in that music group really saved you, right?
It did. And music saved me. I mean, I studied music in India, but it was, I mean, to give you a picture of, you know, there were times I would just go into a practice room, close the door and play music. And I felt.
You play the piano?
I play the piano. Yes. Yes. I'm a pianist. Yes. I would go, the music would touch me so deeply that I would cry. It was so beautiful. And I think I had what we call a musical awakening. It was my solace. It was my home. And it was a place I went to when, you know, I felt so alone and so not at home. So I really think it saved me. I had a wonderful teacher. The faculty were so sweet. And so that was my saving grace. And I'm really glad I had that. If I had not had that, I don't know how I would have. I mean, I'm sure I would have
made it through. Yeah, that's great. It's nice that you had something that really helped you. Now, let me take you back, like, let me take you back to India, sorry, just a little bit more. Growing up, like, the culture is more, like, they place men over women, right? And so you were expected to act a certain way. They had arranged a marriage for you, is that true?
Well, they certainly had that in mind.
I love that.
You know, it was in their minds, it's not even a conversation. It's just what was going to happen.
It was just a done deal. You were like, say what, right? How did you rebel against that?
I write about this in the book, ever since I was a little girl, in India, there's marriages practically every couple of weeks because the families are gigantic.
Yeah.
And I remember always thinking, I'm not going to have an arranged marriage. It was just something I knew, and I didn't know how or what, but I just knew. And growing up in India also, we're very innocent and naive. And the whole emphasis there is, don't look at a man, don't attract attention, don't. It's more about don't.
And you were like, I gotta.
No, and in India I didn't, because, there's also the thing of safety on the streets. It's, you don't want to, be attractive or be seen as seductive or attracting attention. It's always covering up and being with a group of women so that you're not, doing that. I went to in my later years, I went to a girls' school and a girls' college. So my family saw to it that there were not many opportunities to encounter the opposite sex. But once I came here, I remember just being sort of so wide-eyed. I thought American men were so attractive. Their build was different, their physique was different, and there was a confidence and that individualism, which wasn't there so much in India, was that sense of freedom and that sense of personal, I don't want to say power, but that personal self. It was just, and it, not just for men, but for women, that of everything just was so attractive to me. And I, of course, I was not allowed to date, and that was while I was living at home. So I didn't even go there, yes, I was attracted to men, but nobody asked me, well, maybe a couple of people asked me out in the 4 years, but I think people really knew that I was... it was not allowed. And it was not a door that I expected to open, but I always knew, and so the last 2 years of my undergraduate, as I came into my own sense of personal, what I want and being open to the freedoms that are available here to women that I did not even dream about, I started plotting for my own life.
Now, I'm going to stop you right in the middle of that so I can tell everybody about your book. Now, you have a memoir out, and it's called Brown Skin Girl, An Indian American Woman's Magical Journey from Broken to Beautiful. It's such an amazing title, and it gives you an idea of what you're going to read. And I got to tell you, reading the snippet of where you were, like, at the airport, and you got the phone call, and I was just like, oh my God, what is going to happen? I was like, praying that you were going to make it and, be able to, like, fend for yourself and fight against this. So it's a wonderful book. Mm-hmm. Now tell us a little bit more about that. I just wanted to mention the book. So please go ahead. And I'm sorry.
No, thank you so much for checking it out and talking about it. Yeah. So, music also, I ended up majoring in music. I wanted to, and my parents were very against it. And that was a huge battle. They wanted me to do either engineering or medicine or doctor. Law. There's only three options.
Oh my God. Are you sure you're not Nigerian? Are you sure you're not Nigerian? It's like medicine. Like, it's like, you want to do what?
Same for you?
Like,
oh my God.
Exactly. Oh, so you were already fighting them on that front.
And I knew, I was just plotting. I was like, okay, when I go to graduate school, I just knew that it would be my break from them. And I just sort of had this vision. I'm going to create my own life. It's not going to be what they want, and definitely not an arranged marriage. But I'm going to follow my heart, which was music. And, you know, just wherever it went. So I had a scholarship, and, you know, I was paying everything. I was waitressing. So financially, I was independent in graduate school. And about a year into it, a guy I had accompanied on the piano, he was taking voice lessons in my undergraduate school. And, you know, there was nothing there. I mean, we had a few conversations, but there was no dating or anything. But he looked me up. He came to visit a friend. He had come back from Europe, and he had been traveling in Europe for about a year, and literally knocked on my door as I was teaching in my little music studio. And, you know, we spent some time together, and, you know, I just allowed myself to open to the possibility of exploring this. And he ended up moving there. And it was, I will say, as a woman and as an Indian woman, I struggled so much internally about becoming sexual.
Guilt?
It was this line that was drawn for me. And I was internally terrified, like I would become something, whatever, blank. You know, whatever my culture said women would be if they had sex before marriage. So initially I didn't. And only when I knew, only after he moved there, did I say, okay.
Yeah, it's like, this is serious.
And then we were very much in love. We were, you know, it was a beautiful, beautiful relationship. And to, you know, have sexuality in such a beautiful way. We opened spiritually together. And, you know, we were together for about a year and a half. And of course, everything was secret from my family. Of course, nobody knew.
Of course.
And, you know, I went to visit them one summer, and I was still, you know, like for me, what was the final thing for me to feel like I was free? I didn't have my passport and green card. It was something that my father always kept in his desk. So in my mind at 22, to me, that was the one thing I needed to be like legally free in my mind. You know, now I know it wasn't the case, but that'll just tell you how naive I was. So I went home that summer and I took the passport, my passport and green card, and put it in my suitcase, and I wrote a note to my boyfriend, and I popped it in the mailbox outside the house. So 2 days later, I mean, suddenly my mother's in her bedroom a lot. She's on the phone a lot. And 2 days later, these two aunts show up from different parts of the country. They've flown in. And it's no holiday. It's not Thanksgiving. It's not Christmas. Not... And so they take me out.
Yeah.
My two aunts take me out to a mall and think saying they want to go shopping. And then they sit me down in the food court and they say, we think it's time you got married. And then they push a resume across the table at me.
I hope you pushed it right back.
I got very resumes.
It's like, thanks for no thanks. And at this point, they're like, she's crazy.
And then my aunt said, is it because of Evan? And I was like, holy shit, how did they know? I was terrified that they found out. But I just played cool. I was like, no, it's not because of him. So we drove home in cold silence. And then when we go home, my mother has to talk to me. And her question is, did you sleep with him? Well, in that moment, I remember thinking, this is my opportunity to take my own life, like to live my life and own it. You know, I'm not tired of this lying and secret stuff. And this is me becoming an adult. So I said, yeah.
Wrong answer.
So you can imagine the three women, their jaws, they just dropped and they gasped.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and my mother said, well, that's it. You're going back to India for 3 months. And if you like him, then we'll bring you back.
Uh-huh.
And I said, but I have to go back to school and all of that.
Sure.
She said, no, we're going back tomorrow. We'll do that. And you can come back. You can call him. You can write to him. And this is just to see if you know, I mean, the way she put it, it was in this, there was like care about me, you know, that was, and I was very conflicted.
Cajoling tone, like,
I was conflicted, but I was also just terrified. In that moment, I also became a little girl filled with shame.
Yes.
Filled with shame about now who I was at blame.
Understandable.
Right. But my culture said I would be if I had sex before marriage. And I just became this little obedient, quiet Indian girl. So the next day, and that's the scene with what you read in the airport. That's where they took me back to India. And once I was back there, they said I was never returning. And took my passport, my green card, my wallet, and essentially put me under house arrest in my grandparents' home for a year. No phone call. There was no internet at the time. No mail. No going out.
That is just insane. It's not surprising.
Yeah.
But it's just insane because you think,
yeah. You
know, where we're at this day and age that it still happens with such frequency. Now, how were you, without giving anything away, because I think people should definitely buy this book and read up on it, how you managed to get back and become your own person.
I managed to escape. There's a lot of pressuring for an arranged marriage. About a year after that, they let me out. And, you know, I worked and always with a plan somehow to be free, even if I had to stay in India. It was to get away. To live my life. To live my life was, you know, my motivation. That was what I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did get away. And it was, I will say, the trauma of that was huge. I don't think I even realized how huge it was. To give you an indication, I could not play the piano. You know, so it's like what was so beautiful and true to who I was, I couldn't feel. And that is what trauma does. The body shuts down, the part of the soul leaves. And I didn't know, I didn't even know what therapy was. So I lived for many years kind of stumbling about and bumbling about. I mean, I could survive, you know, and had a job and all of that, but I wasn't,
you were just
I was a shell of who I was. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there was nobody, of course, to look up to because you can't go to anybody in the family because they're obviously against what you're trying to do. Yeah. There wasn't really any help. You're like in those days, the internet wasn't really there. You couldn't look up like who else has experienced something like this. So you must have felt like quite alone and there was nobody to help you.
Yeah.
Now, I assume that, you know, when you finally came back to the U.S., it took you a long time to start healing. How did you finally start healing?
Well, they stayed here. My mother took me and was there for 3 months and came back. So it's not, they left me there and with my grandparents, my two old grandparents. And I mean, there was family around, but nobody really checked in on me. You know, it was kind of like, okay, this is, the parents know best. And the story, I mean, there's so much. The story that was told was that I was on drugs and, you know,
of course,
it was just horrific, all to protect my so-called reputation, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So no, it was quite the escape. And, you know, many years of what I would call numbness of just surviving, but not living, you know, getting through. I had a job and yes, but I also, there was so much fear. And I think, you know, we hear about kidnappings and abductions when it's a person you don't know, right? Somebody's abducted or, you know, that kind of, but when it's your own family, it does a number on you.
Yeah.
And it created such an internal conflict of, do I choose me or do I choose them? And that as an immigrant, as an Indian American immigrant. Yeah.
Of course, it might have been easier just to choose them, just so you can just, you know, but you, obviously you're a fighter. You chose yourself because ultimately you have to make yourself happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is the only way to live, no matter what the culture, the religion and all of that. Yeah.
When you started to heal, like, did you go from India back to California or did you go back to North Carolina? Where did you land?
Yeah, no, then I ended up marrying an Indian man, and it was, again, it was
not arranged though, was it?
Not arranged though, but let's say not ideal.
Yeah.
You know, and I was still in the trauma. I was bumbling. Like I said, I was just fumbling and didn't know.
So you were still trying to please them. So it was like a halfway, trying to please them and trying to please you.
Right, right.
Wow.
And living in fear and shame. That shame was so deep in me that I had no idea, you know? Yeah. So I was being the good girl. I played the good daughter and the good Indian wife for many years.
Yeah.
And then something broke. You know, it just, the marriage was emotionally abusive and it just kept increasing over years. And, finally got physically abusive and my parents were like, no, you have to stay because marriage is your spirituality, you know? And I was like, at what point does the line, at what point? And then I questioned everything, the family, the culture, the religion. And I said, I'm walking. I have to leave it all to find myself, you know, because everything that I'd read was against a woman even divorcing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a wow.
Yeah.
But you know, you have to save your sanity. And I know it must have been really, really hard because, you know, they don't expect you. I mean, divorce is like, it doesn't even exist, you know?
Yeah. There was only one woman in my family of hundreds who'd been divorced. She was naturally accepted, you know, and so this is new ground for me, you know, and I think this is what immigrants experience. It's like we create new lives, we create new trails, we're path breakers, we create new ways for ourselves. And somehow when I decided to leave in the midst of all that, there's all these music people from my past life started just coming into my life and got reconnected with my music teacher and music friends. And I just knew I had to go back to school to become a therapist. I don't know how, I'd never been in therapy before, but there was something about it that drew me. And it was an extraordinary period of healing because the school was very experiential. It's like we had to work on ourselves as a way of learning to be a good therapist. And it was incredibly transformational. And ever since then, there's so many amazing synchronicities that opened up spiritually, divine feminine, nature. I mean, I felt like I opened up to magic as when I started to choose myself. It's as though the universe and Mother Earth kind of opened their arms to say, we are going to hold you in our arms as you walk to heal. And it was so beautiful and magical.
That's great. I mean, I think it's kind of fantastic that when you first moved, it was music that saved you. And then you come around and once again, music came back and encircled you and led you towards your true calling and helped you heal. That's fantastic. Now, how do you go about, you know, what if somebody were to say to you, Maitreyi, you know, it couldn't have been all bad because here you are, you made it okay. What would you say to that person after slapping them upside down, of course? It's like, you turned out okay, you know, and people will say that too, you know.
And I did, but you know, a lot of that is my healing work. You know, a lot of, I think people who don't do the healing will say, you're okay, get over it kind of thing, right? And I received that message a lot. What's, you have, you know, you have a job, you have a home, what's the problem here? Where, you know, and then the slap is necessary. Yes. But having done the healing work, I come at it from a very different place. Of, yes, it was probably something my soul chose coming in.
Yeah.
Because I cannot tell you how much I have, what the healing process was so transformative. And there are many stages to it. So for someone to, it depends where someone says you're okay. Like now I know I'm more than okay.
Yeah.
But at that time, it would have been a very different response. And I think that sensitivity people don't have, you know, but being in the healing profession. And now, I mean, I forgave my parents. I've forgiven my family. And I didn't expect to even dip my toe into that water. But, and it wasn't even a goal. It happened. And I think that speaks to the possibility of healing anything. And I think that's what enables me to work with women, that it's because I know firsthand what's possible.
You think it's cathartic to help and share your experiences and your story with the others so they know that they're not alone.
Yeah. That was the main reason I wrote it. It was not like, this is my story. This is for women, especially women of color, women from patriarchal cultures like India, to know that there's so much, they are so much more. And that.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. They are so much more.
And that, you know, there is so much possibly outside the culture, because in India, there's always this stay within the culture and our culture is best. And it's kind of almost a cultural superiority. Yeah. But this world of psychology is a Western world. And I feel so grateful to have had both worlds, right? Yeah. Because I can draw what I want. But to also to show, I mean, that was in my heart, to show Indian women that there is healing. And again, not Indian women, but anybody who's had any kind of trauma, you know, that healing is possible. We'll have to do the work, but it's possible. And it can be a beautiful, magical journey. And it is a path of dignity.
Yes.
And a reclaiming and a redefining of who you are as a woman.
Yes.
You know, because we all get these stories. This is what you are and this is who you can be as a woman. But no, there's so much more.
Yeah, female empowerment. Exactly. I think it's so great. Once you get to know yourself, you can go out and say, you know what? This is not what I want. First, I thought it came with age. But I've always, my mom always said, you know, I think I sent you off to America way too soon because I was the one who didn't want to get married. But, you know, like no matter what she said, who didn't want to do this? You want, no, I don't want to do it. I just want to travel and that's it. And so she always blamed herself, you know, she like till she died, she blamed herself because it's just not her now. I have like aunts that, when they ask about me, like I still have one that will cross herself, you know, when they say that I don't have any kids. And I'm like, it's because I don't freaking want them. You know? You know, it's like, oh, you know, and it's like, Kemi, you know, the one without kids, you know, like they whisper it like it's some sort of, and I'm like, yeah, the one without kids, you know. So it's kind of nice to know that there are other cultures where they do this bullshit. And it's like, we got to break it down and just say, you know, go with a sledgehammer and just say, hey, this is what I want. So I don't care what you want. I got to live my life. So for any woman who's listening from out there and you've got that kind of feeling, you've got to realize that you've got the power to change it. And yeah. People like Maitreyi, you know, is a great place to start.
And you, I mean, I love that you shared that. I love that you're a fighter and a rebel and have, you know, created your own way. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even realize I was doing that. I was just like, but I just don't, it's just stubbornness. I just don't listen. So, it wasn't like I set out to do it at all. So, now, I will definitely leave Maitreyi's information on the Next Bite of Life blog post that goes with this. I'll give you the name of the book and how to contact her. Now, I will leave you with one last question, Maitreyi. I'm sorry I told you it was going to be about 20 minutes or so, but we just went a little bit over. Is there anything you want to share with the audience, advice for somebody who might be going through this, how they can plan their own escape or whatnot? Is there anything you would like to leave us with?
Yeah, thank you. That's such a great question. Choose you. Choose you always first, regardless of, you know, if there's any conflict with or difference, where you're not feeling honored or respected or valued by those around you. Tradition can be old, yes. But we are the living current. You are the living current embodiment of that, and choose you at every step, whatever that is for you. And I will say that when you choose yourself, magic happens. That the path gets created. Mother Earth herself will create a path for you. And you are so supported. Support will come to you in ways that you cannot imagine. But it takes that act of you choosing you, because only you can do that.
That's very great advice. And you can find Maitreyi on maitreyimeliana.com. And once again, her book is called Brown Skin Girl, An Indian American Woman's Magical Journey from Broken to Beautiful. Gotta remember, if she can do it, so can you. Thank you so much for joining me today, Maitreyi. It's been wonderful and enlightening, to say the least. I loved it.
I loved it too, Kim. It's been such a pleasure to know you and meet you this way.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you on the next episode. Bye.